This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and we're starting a couple of minutes early today because we're waiting for the beginning of a live press conference with Boston Mayor Marty Walsh, Massachusetts Governor Charlie Baker, Boston Police Commissioner Bill Evans, and other community leaders. They are going to be talking about state and local reaction to the weekend's violence at a white supremacist rally in Charlottesville, Virginia, and what might happen as another controversial rally is expected this weekend on Boston Common. We'll turn to that press conference live as soon as it begins. In the meantime, President Donald Trump spoke today. He's been roundly criticized for his earlier comments on Charlottesville over the weekend, saying there was, quote, violence on all sides at the white supremacist rally where almost 20 people were injured and 32-year-old Heather Heyer was killed when a car allegedly driven by James Alex Fields slammed into a group of counter-protesters. Well, today, President Trump condemned those groups by name.
In times such as these, America has always shown its true character, responding to hate with love, division with unity, and violence with an unwavering resolve for justice. As a candidate, I promise to restore law and order to our country, and our federal law enforcement agencies are following through on that pledge. We will spare no resource in fighting so that every American child can grow up free from violence and fear.
That's President Donald Trump a little earlier today. And again, as I said, we are going to go live to a press conference with Boston Mayor Marty Walsh and Governor Charlie Baker and others as soon as that starts, and we expect that to happen in a couple minutes. So first, let's turn to Renee Graham. She's op-ed contributor. She's a contributor and columnist at the Boston Globe. Renee, it's good to have you back.
Hi, Meghna.
Hey, so we're going to talk about Boston here in just a second, but you, I'm sure, watched the president's statement today along with the rest of us. What did you make of it?
Well, it just struck me as sort of too little, too late. You know, these are events that happened on Saturday, and the president was roundly criticized for not being able to call out white supremacists and neo-Nazis. And he did so today, but it really seemed like he did the absolute least that he could do.
So it's not enough that he finally said that violence perpetrated by groups and hate perpetrated groups by such as the KKK and Nazis or neo-Nazis, that's not adequate? I mean, too little, too late, perhaps, but better than nothing.
I mean, better than nothing, but awfully close to nothing. He spoke for all of, I'm not even sure he even spoke for a minute. It was impossible for him to say that on Saturday in the heat of it. You know, there's this idea that, well, he meant that. Well, he could have simply said that. This is not a president who ever minces his words or has trouble going after people or those he feels have been disloyal to him or have somehow insulted him. And somehow he just couldn't muster the words to do this on Saturday. And it took him, you know, 48 hours to finally name, you know, to call this barbarism for what it is.
Well, listeners, we definitely want to hear it from you today. We're going to do it all over social media. So send us a tweet at Radio Boston, or you can go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/Radio Boston. Send us your comments there. We'd love to hear what you think about it. Renee, let's hear a little bit more, tiny bit more here of what the president said just earlier this afternoon.
Racism is evil. And those who cause violence in its name are criminals and thugs, including the KKK, neo-Nazis, white supremacists, and other hate groups that are repugnant to everything we hold dear as Americans. We are a nation founded on the truth that all of us are created equal. We are equal in the eyes of our Creator. We are equal under the law.
Renee Graham, I'm wondering that. So the president has said this. Now we're looking at, you know, some kind of rally on Boston Common, perhaps on Saturday. I mean, what effect do you think that the president's comments will have, if any, on reaction here in the city?
I don't expect them to have any reaction, any impact whatsoever. I think the people who espouse these beliefs and are now planning to descend on Boston, I don't think they'll be swayed at all. I mean, one thing I would have liked to have heard from the president was that, you know, these groups do not have a champion in the White House, and that's exactly how they feel, and that's exactly what they said after he, you know, made the statement he did on Saturday. So I don't know that anything he said today is going to dissuade them from from coming here and trying to sort of force these beliefs down people's throats, or, you know, or to maybe perhaps do some version of what they pulled in Charlottesville.
Mm. Renee, stand by for a second, because I want to bring in Reverend Mariama White-Hammond. She's a minister at the Bethel AME Church. Reverend White-Hammond, it's good to have you back.
Thanks for having me.
So you just heard that piece of tape we played from the president who spoke earlier today, invoking the fact that, in his words, we are all equal in the eyes of the Creator. I mean, what was your reaction to his statements about Charlottesville today?
Well, I mean, I agree with a lot of folks that for a person who's been so outspoken, who's never been known for thinking before he spoke, I would tend to think whatever he said first is what I would take most seriously. It's really concerning that it took him 48 hours of critiques and other people having to say something for him to finally do this. But I also thought his words were really interesting, and it made me think, because he is naming that we're a country founded on equality. But the reality is that those words were written by people who were slave owners themselves and who didn't think that their wives and daughters even had the capacity to make proper decisions and be full voters.
Hmm.
So the reality is that we've always struggled between the idea of who we should be as a country, the nation that espouses to be about freedom, and the realities on the ground. And so when he talks about truth, the truth is that the KKK is also a huge part of American history, and we need to face it, and our inability to face it is why we keep seeing these things resurface. And that's not to say we've made no progress. We certainly have made progress, but there has always been a tension in American history between that which we espouse and the reality on the ground.
Reverend White-Hammond and Renee Graham, hang on here for just a second, because joining me in the studio right now is Daniel Linsky. He served on the Boston Police in the Boston Police Department for more than 20 years. He's now managing director in Kroll's Investigations and Disputes Practice. Mr. Linsky, welcome back to you.
Thanks for having me.
We got just about a minute here before we expect to hear the mayor and Police Commissioner Evans and Governor Charlie Baker speak here. But given what happened in Charlottesville over the weekend, you know, what do you think? How do you think Boston law enforcement may be preparing for whatever rally? We don't know exactly what's going to happen on Saturday, but whatever might happen here on Saturday.
I'm hoping the mayor, the governor, and the commissioner are going to encourage everyone to go out and do something positive on Saturday, to go to a community center and do some programming for kids, to help clean up parks or schools. Wouldn't it be great if a Nazi spewed hate in a forest and no one was there to listen to him and it didn't make a difference? By showing up, we actually give credence to these individuals, and I think we've got to unite with the community partners to make sure that we're united in a peaceful message, that we're a city that wants to create an environment for all and keep working towards that, getting better and better at that, and ignore these individuals with their hateful rhetoric.
Well, so the group that's planning some kind of rally on Saturday, call themselves the New Free Speech Movement. They say they have no official affiliation with the organizers who brought the neo-Nazis and white supremacists to Charlottesville. But I take your point about the community's overall response. But nevertheless, we saw the incredible violence and murderous violence that happened in Charlottesville.
Absolutely.
Mr. Linsky, you got to think that BPD is wondering, like, they've got to have some preparations in mind. Lord forbid anything happens here, but in case, right?
Absolutely. So we want to try and work with our community partners to get people to do positive things before it and try and limit the crowd of counter-protesters that are going to come there and make sure that the counter-protesters are within the confines of the law. We've got to make sure that, as hateful as they are, that they have rights and the police have to protect them. Thankfully, we have an unorganized group. We've had them four or five times in our city. They're lucky if we get a dozen of these neo-Nazi idiots to show up. They come, they make their point, and then they usually beg for the police to put them in the police wagon to get them away from the crowds that they have managed to form around them. Law enforcement's got an obligation to protect them, no matter how evil they are, and the police will have a very robust visible presence where people will be out in the line between the protesters and the counter-protesters. They'll be working with the counter-protesters to try and do the right thing. And if need be, in the background, you need to have tactical resources to get there very quickly the minute anyone engages in any instance of violence.
Yeah. Renee Graham, let me bring you back in here. So it looks like, actually, Renee, hang on for just a second. We're going to go to this press conference live with Boston Mayor Marty Walsh and Governor Charlie Baker.
State representatives, also city councilors, thank you all for being there with us today. I want to thank representatives from Attorney General Healey's office, who's with us today as well. We have members of the Urban League. Donnell Williams, the president of the Urban League, was with us. Tanisha Sullivan from the NAACP, the Anti-Defamation League, Civil Liberties Union, the Black Ministerial Alliance. We had a lot of different representation from all over the city of Boston, all over the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, certainly with us this morning, this afternoon, to talk about and share some of the concerns that we're all feeling and hearing from constituencies and around the country. We're going to have a brief speaking program today, myself, and then I'm going to turn over to the governor, who will say a few words. The governor will then turn over to the commissioner of the police department, Commissioner Evans. Commissioner Evans will turn over to Dan Bennett, the Secretary of Public Safety on a statewide level, and then we will open it up for questions. You can ask myself, any four of us, but anyone behind us who's here as well, please feel free when you're asking questions. If you see somebody and you want to direct a question to somebody other than the four people speaking, we'd love you to do that. Since the weekend, our thoughts and prayers have been with the people of Charlottesville, Mayor Michael Signer, and all the victims of the violence and the targets of hatred. We want to say to them today that, Boston, we stand with you. I spoke to the mayor yesterday, and I told him, his wife is from Lexington, so he has a connection to Massachusetts. I told him that we certainly do stand with you. And today we have a book in City Hall, in the lobby of City Hall, that anyone can sign a message of condolence that will support and deliver to Charlottesville. So please, when we're done here this afternoon, I'd love to ask the press as well, when you come in, if you could sign the condolence book so we can send it off at the end of the week. Tonight, we will light City Hall in blue and orange in honor of the University of Virginia. Those students and that community that stood strong in the face of hate, we stand with them. We also have a message to the hate groups, especially any that are planning to come to our city this weekend. Boston does not welcome you here. Boston does not want you here. Boston rejects your message. We reject racism. We reject white supremacy. We reject anti-Semitism. We reject the KKK. We reject neo-Nazis. We reject domestic terrorism. And we reject hatred. And we will do every single thing in our power to keep hate out of our city. We are a city that believes in free speech. But we will not tolerate incitements to violence. We will not tolerate threatening behavior. We will not have it. And we will stand in solidarity as a diverse community and a diverse nation, as we do every single day. The news from Charlottesville reached me between my weekend events in our city. I was at a block party in Roxbury. I was at the August Moon Festival in Chinatown. I was at the Dominican Parade in Jamaica Plain. I was thanking veterans for their service in East Boston. Those veterans didn't have to be asked twice to condemn swastikas and all that they stand for. Yet our president had to be shamed into doing the same thing 2 days later. This was never a many sides issue. This is a right and wrong issue. The vice president talked about fringe groups. We're not a fringe. If they are allies in the White House, we heard the rhetoric at those campaign rallies. We heard the silence this weekend. Don't hand hatred a megaphone and pretend you can't hear it. Leaders call out hate and reject it before it becomes violent. That's why we're here today. That's why this weekend myself and the governor spent nearly about 10 or 15 different phone calls talking about how do we reject hate in the Commonwealth and the city of Boston. And we must also say what we stand for as Bostonians, as Americans, as human beings. We stand for compassion and inclusion. We stand for diversity and equality. We stand for love. We stand for justice. And nothing and no one will ever change that of who we are. Now it's my honor to introduce to you the governor of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, Governor Baker.
Thanks very much, Mr. Mayor, and thank you to everybody who had the chance to meet with us earlier today and discuss the tragic events this past weekend in Charlottesville. Earlier today, I spoke with Virginia Mayor Terry McAuliffe to express our concerns and our outrage and our solidarity with him and with the people of Virginia who stood tall against the white supremacists who came to Charlottesville and caused such havoc in that small town. What happened in Virginia was a tragedy and an act of terror, a tragedy perpetrated by white supremacists that disturbed, as it should, Americans everywhere. As governor of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, I want to be clear that there is no place here for that type of hatred, period, that we saw in Virginia. We stand here together today as elected officials, law enforcement, and community leaders to say that we will not tolerate the kind of hatred and bigotry we saw there in the Commonwealth. What happened in Charlottesville, simply put, was an act of terrorism, where an individual sought to hurt people and killed an innocent woman bystander and tried to incite fear into a group of innocent people. As far as I'm concerned, that's terrorism. It's disturbing and it's sickening to turn on the news and see that there are people in this country who believe that the color of their skin or their place of birth makes them superior to their neighbors. And we as a Commonwealth flatly reject and denounce this intolerance. The mayor pointed out, and I agree wholeheartedly, that freedom of speech is a founding principle of our great nation. And while this right has served us well, often promoting unity and tolerance, it can also be wielded as a weapon of divisiveness and hatred, as we saw in Charlottesville. With this right comes responsibility, and in Massachusetts, we accept the responsibility to loudly reject any forms of hatred and bigotry. Since the horrible events in Virginia took place, our state public safety officials have been in close communication with our colleagues in the federal government, our partners in the city of Boston, and those across the Commonwealth to make sure that what happens in Virginia does not take place here in Massachusetts. And to those who engage in violent acts of every kind, any kind, understand that you will be held responsible, and we will do everything in our power to prevent any type of threat to the people of this Commonwealth and this city going forward. With respect to the rally being planned for this weekend, the state police, along with the Boston police and other state and local and federal officials, will work closely with community organizing groups and others to monitor the situation and take the necessary precautions to make sure that everyone plays by the rules and that we have a safe weekend here in Massachusetts. Thank you. With that, I'll turn it over to Commissioner Evans. There
you are. You're listening
to
a live press conference with, that was Governor Charlie Baker, who just spoke, and now Boston Police Commissioner Bill Evans.
To the families of the two Virginia State Troopers who lost their lives, our fellow officers who were out there doing their job, and they lost their lives tragically that day, and obviously to the young lady who was, run down. That's sad. But, we're all here united to stand against the hatred of what happened that day. In Charlottesville, we're often, as police officers, sort of thrust in the middle of protecting groups that we don't necessarily agree with, and I think that very much can be the case on Saturday when this particular group wants to come to the Boston Common. We have a good plan. We've been meeting since over the weekend. This morning we had a meeting, and I'm very confident in our plan. I think we've handled major demonstrations in the city, whether it be Patriot celebrations, parades, Occupy Boston, Black Lives Matter. So I think I'm confident that, people who do come down and are going to march are going to be safe. All I ask, and I'll say, is we do anticipate large crowds, but we expect best behavior out of people. We will not tolerate any acts of violence or any misbehavior or any vandalism whatsoever. We're going to have a uniform presence out there, and we're going to make sure the event goes off as smoothly as possible. We've been reaching out to this particular group. At this time, there has been no permit issued. We're going to work with them on the parameters if there is a permit issued, and we'll make sure they abide by that permit. The same goes through with a lot of other anti-protesters. We're going to work with them as they approach the common. So, you know, we're hoping that we have a safe day because, you know, we don't want anybody to be injured. And like I said in the meeting, I want to thank all the community leaders here, all the electeds who I work with day in, day out. It's pretty sad that we have to waste so many resources on such a group with such hatred coming to Massachusetts, when we should be focusing on the safety of children on the streets of the city. And so, you know, it's just, you know, it's troubling to me that we have to deal with this day and age. So on behalf of all of us, you know, and the mayor, you know, we all stand for the same thing, and that's we're for peace, and we speak strongly against hatred, and we'll make sure this event goes off without a hitch. So thank you all. I appreciate it. And at this, I'm going to introduce Secretary of Public Safety Dan Bennett, who is in charge of the state police. The state police will be assisting us if we need them on that particular day. And so, you know, again, it's nothing new to us. We've handled major demonstrations, and I don't find this any different on that particular day. So, Dan.
Thank you very much, Commissioner Evans. The Boston Police have the primary responsibility. I'm 100% confident that the Boston Police are going to keep this and make this a safe day. They've planned many of these events. The State Police have been part of the protection of Boston. We are ready to perform the role and assist them in whatever duty they need. We have 2,000 state troopers that are ready to work together with the Boston Police. It's been a great teamwork every time there's been either a demonstration or a celebration in Boston. We're here to help them protect the city of Boston. I have 100% confidence that the Boston Police and the State Police are going to make this a safe day on Saturday. Thank you.
All right. Well, you just heard a live press conference from City Hall Plaza there featuring Secretary of Public Safety Dan Bennett, who just spoke, Boston Police Commissioner Bill Evans, who said BPD is already working with the group that plans its rally here in Boston on Saturday. They expect a lot of people to come, both protesters and counter-protesters. Evans said he wants to make sure that the event goes off and that everyone who arrives, that it goes off without a hitch, without even a hint of the violence we saw in Charlottesville over the weekend. Governor Charlie Baker also spoke, saying that he believes what happened in Virginia was an act of terror. And Marty Walsh, Boston Mayor Marty Walsh, spoke, saying with passion, Boston rejects the KKK, rejects racism, rejects hate and anti-Semitism. He said Boston's a city that believes in free speech, but will not tolerate threatening behavior. So let's get some quick thoughts from the folks who've been joining us since the top of this hour here. Dan Linsky is with us again. He's a 27-year veteran of the Boston Police Department, former superintendent and chief of BPD. And Dan Linsky, so Commissioner Evans said he expects a lot of people. You know, in a way, we heard the standard things of law enforcement is ready. But I do have a question about, you know, ostensibly law enforcement was ready in Virginia too, but we still saw all the violence that happened there. I mean, what do you think is different for Boston?
We've had a number of experiences dealing with these large events, and I don't know that the officials in Virginia had the same level of experience. They might have had the same planning and some of the same training, but this is something that occurred quite frequently in Boston. We had sports teams that do amazing, and that's great, but our kids come out and sometimes get out of hand, leading to hundreds of thousands of crowds that are acting in a way that has to be controlled. Boston Police has great expertise doing that, and we changed the way we did business. We have a layered approach. We go out, we engage people up front, we talk to people, we encourage them to do the right thing. It's hard to throw a rock in a bottle at a cop if he was encouraging you and talking to you and respectful to you a couple of hours beforehand. And then we have the bicycle units that are quick and come in and can form a line and get pushing and shoving if need be. And we keep our public order platoons hidden in the background that are very quickly able to get out, and those individuals who want to engage in violence, we'll engage them, arrest them, and take them off the set as quickly as possible.
Renee Graham and Reverend Mariama White-Hammond, they're also with us. Again, Renee is a contributor to the Boston Globe. Reverend White-Hammond is a minister at the Bethel AME Church. Renee, let me just turn to you for your quick thoughts there. I mean, Mayor Marty Walsh was pretty passionate in his remarks, saying that the Boston won't tolerate threatening behavior. He also had some words for President Trump and the rhetoric that Trump that the president used as a candidate during the campaign.
Well, you know, I think it was very important for the mayor to come up with a very robust statement and almost to say everything on his first go round that the president did not do on Saturday. So I think this, you know, it was two sided. It was, you know, we reject hate in Boston, but also, you know, we need leadership in this issue. You know, we need someone who's willing to sit back and say, you know, this is not acceptable, and to say it in no uncertain terms. So I think, you know, that was really very obvious and very pointed in the mayor's statement.
Mm. And Reverend White-Hammond, your thoughts?
Yeah, no, I'm, you know, again, this is what I wish was happening at the national level, but it is what's happening here. You know, I am still concerned about Saturday, I want to be honest. But I think that, you know, what I heard at least makes me feel like we might be on the right track.
Mm. Well, listeners, again, we want to hear from you. We're getting some tweets coming in. Again, tweet us at Radio Boston. There's one here from Mark Lamoth. Mark, I hope I said your name properly. You said, Mark said that Trump's remarks are 2 days too late. He said, we know, truly know how you feel. He said the remarks were a disgrace to World War II heroes. So folks, keep sending us your thoughts. Again, tweet us at Radio Boston. We're going to take a break here and come back and hear a little bit more what the president had to say and talk about the climate here in Boston today. I'm going to say thank you to Daniel Linsky. He's a 27-year veteran of the Boston Police Department, former superintendent in chief and managing director now in Kroll's Investigations and Disputes Practice. Mr. Linsky, it's always great to have you. Thanks so much.
Thanks.
Renee and Reverend White-Hammond, stick with us. We'll come back to you in a little bit. But again, listeners, send us a tweet. We're at Radio Boston, or go to Facebook.com/Radio Boston. Let us know what you think about what happened in Charlottesville and what you hope will or won't happen in Boston at a planned rally this weekend. We'll be back. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.
Thanks for listening to the Radio Boston podcast. If you'd like to support WBUR, go to radioboston.org and click the pledge button in the upper right-hand corner. Okay, back to the show.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We are, of course, talking about the awful violence and racism on display in Charlottesville, Virginia this weekend, and also about concerns regarding a planned rally in Boston Common this Saturday. We're getting some tweets from you guys out there. Remember, tweet us at Radio Boston and let us know what you think. Glenn Koenig, sent us this tweet. He says, there are many more of us who support inclusivity when compared to those who support divisiveness. Let's turn now actually to Charlottesville and get an update on what's been happening there. Joining us is Sandy Houseman of WVTF Virginia Public Radio. Sandy, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you.
So one can only imagine what the mood in the city is today. I mean, just tell us, what has it been like in the past 24 hours?
Well, I think since Saturday, people have been very distressed. It's been a really bad time for the city, in part because we feel targeted by a group of very angry people. And most of the folks who came to that rally on both sides, both the protesters and the counter-protesters, were likely from elsewhere. So it's hard for the city, you know. We consider ourselves upstanding good liberals, I would say. And to have this happen in the community is what the mayor said, heartbreaking.
Hmm. Well, what more do we know about the suspect who allegedly rammed the car into counter-protesters, again, killing 32-year-old Heather Heyer? James Alex Fields, he appeared via video in front of a judge today, right?
Yes, that's right. He was denied bail. So he'll remain, I believe, in our county jail until, I think, about a week from now. He will be given a court date or may have his first appearance. I'm not sure. But what we know about him, and it's very little at this point, it comes from his Facebook page, for example, where it was clear he was a supporter of Donald Trump and Adolf Hitler. We know that he was trained in the army for a period of months and then dismissed. apparently not suitable material for the U.S. military.
Hmm. I'm seeing here that public defender said that the public defender's office said it could not represent him.
I had not heard that,
okay.
And that's an interesting thing. Perhaps they'll bring an attorney in from another community. Charlottesville is a pretty small town. It's about 50,000 people, with the university students included. And perhaps there would be too many conflicts. I don't know why that is.
Well, and to your earlier point, I mean, he was allegedly driving a car with Ohio license plates, right?
Right.
And was not from Charlottesville himself.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. So tell me, you know, there's been we're viewing this from Boston and, you know, only getting bits and pieces as it works in this day and age via social media and other reporting. What's the community's reaction to how law enforcement handled all that happened in Charlottesville?
That's a very good question. And in fact, I just produced a story on that. Quite a number of people felt that police did too little to break up fights, for example, on the street. On the other hand, there was an alt-right, a white supremacist leader who stood outside the courthouse while James Fields was being arraigned to defend him and to say that everything that happened on Saturday was self-defense, that his group was completely blameless, that Charlottesville ordered police to stand down and let them be harmed. So there are, you know, people on both sides complaining that police did not do their jobs. That said, a couple of lines of state police in riot gear strolled across our downtown mall, which is an area, Tony part of town, where people come to drink coffee or wine and relax. They were sitting out in cafes, and the public stood up and applauded these officers. Hmm. So, you know, there's a difference of opinion as to whether the police did enough.
Wow. You know, because it's interesting, because Virginia is an open carry state, right?
It is.
Yeah, because I was seeing that, you know, of course, Virginia Governor Terry McAuliffe told the New York Times that that 80% of the people there in the rally had semi-automatic weapons. And he said, you saw the militia walking down the street, you would have thought they were an army, and that they had better equipment than the state police had. And that was part of the reason why law enforcement didn't intervene in more places where people were being attacked by some of the folks in these rallies.
You know, honestly, that had not occurred to me, but I imagine it could be intimidating. On the other hand, those officers were well-equipped, no doubt wearing bulletproof vests. They had shields, helmets, and frankly, that's their job. They need to step in when there's violence, and there was definitely violence even before that car plowed into a crowd of counter-protesters.
Mm. Sandy, you're the Charlottesville bureau chief, right?
Yes.
So you were there this weekend.
Yes.
Were you
all weekend? 17-hour day on Saturday.
I mean, were you? How close to the violence or the rallies did you get?
I was there. You know, I was watching as the tear gas was fired and moving away rapidly. It was surprising in the same way that the Klan rally was surprising. That was several weeks ago. 30-some members of the Klan from North Carolina came up to protest plans to remove our statue of General Robert E. Lee. And I was astonished when 1,000 local people turned out to shout them down. It was really quite surprising because Charlottesville does not seem to me a very activist community. It's certainly a community of people who consider themselves intelligent, reasonable, certainly well-meaning. Many would probably call themselves liberals. This town definitely went for Hillary Clinton and not Donald Trump. So I was surprised when so many people came out to speak their minds or shout their minds. And the same thing really happened Saturday. We had many, many more counter-protesters than white supremacists here in Charlottesville. And I suppose if there's any silver lining, that might be it. As the tweeter said to you, you know, there are more people of goodwill who do not oppress, do not discriminate, favor diversity, then there are people like those that are getting all the headlines these days.
Well, Sandy, I'm going to ask you for just a moment to step maybe a little bit outside your reporter role here and just ask you, what would your advice be for Boston? I mean, we're looking at possibly a potentially contentious rally happening here this weekend.
You know, it's very difficult. I assume that you have stronger laws with regard to guns in Boston, so that would be a good start.
Yeah.
But what we found here in Charlottesville is that there are so many elements you simply cannot predict. For example, we did not know that these white supremacists were going to march on the University of Virginia campus the night before their planned rally. Nor did we know that the rally, which was supposed to start at noon, would actually begin closer to 8:30 or 9. You know, the guys were in town. They didn't have anything to do, so they wandered over to Lee Park and started chanting and waving Confederate flags. So that was kind of a surprise. And then, of course, this car. You know, we live in this age of terrorism when it's difficult to anticipate all the things that could go wrong. So, obviously, we wish Boston well. We hope that something like what happened here is not repeated elsewhere. And it sounds like your law enforcement are as prepared as they can be. But there is always the unknown.
Well, Sandy Houseman, Charlottesville Bureau Chief for WVTF. Sandy, thank you so much, and we wish only all the best and all the healing possible in Charlottesville. Thank you.
And thanks for your good wishes.
All right. Well, President Donald Trump did speak a little earlier today. He gave some scripted remarks, I should say, regarding what happened in Charlottesville, Virginia. We're going to speak to a man who's advised four presidents in just a moment, but let's listen to a little bit of what the president said about racism, about hate, and about the violence in Charlottesville.
As I said on Saturday, we condemn in the strongest possible terms this egregious display of hatred, bigotry, and violence. It has no place in America. And as I have said many times before, no matter the color of our skin, we all live under the same laws. We all salute the same great flag, and we are all made by the same Almighty God. We must love each other, show affection for each other, and unite together in condemnation of hatred, bigotry, and violence. We must rediscover the bonds of love and loyalty that bring us together as Americans. Racism is evil. And those who cause violence in its name are criminals and thugs, including the KKK, neo-Nazis, white supremacists, and other hate groups that are repugnant to everything we hold dear as Americans. We are a nation founded on the truth that all of us are created equal. We are equal in the eyes of our Creator. We are equal under the law, and we are equal under our Constitution. Those who spread violence in the name of bigotry strike at the very core of America.
President Donald Trump speaking earlier today. Well, let's turn to David Gergen. He advised four U.S. presidents in his career, and he's now co-director of the Center for Public Leadership at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government. David Gergen, it's good to have you back. So, Mr. Gergen, I hope your phone line's holding up here. But my first question to you is that obviously the president is the commander in chief. He helps design economic policy. But also the office of the presidency is one that calls for moral leadership. Did the president's statement today claw back what many people saw as a failure of moral leadership over the weekend? Looks like we don't have David Gergen. We're going to try and call him back. Professor Gergen, we're trying to get you back on the line here. Let's turn back to Renee Graham and Reverend Mariana White-Hammond, who have been sticking with us. Thank you both for being so patient. Renee and Reverend White-Hammond, I've asked you both this question, but I'm going to repeat it since it's the one I wanted to ask David Gergen. Did the president claw back any sense of moral leadership? What do you think?
No.
Full stop.
Yeah, full stop. Yeah, I thought his statement had all the sincerity of a coerced thank you from a petulant child. You know, I think he resented that he had to make another statement. And, you know, the New York Times is actually reporting that at a later press conference today, you know, he appeared angry and resentful that he had to make that additional statement. So, you know, when you have this sense that he had to have his arm twisted into doing this, then no, I don't think he managed to do that at all.
Well, Renee,
he was reading.
You know, you mentioned he was asked later. So there was basically a White House press pool availability that the president did give just a little while ago, just earlier this hour. We have a little cut from that. He had an exchange with a reporter about whether or not he explicitly condemned hate groups.
Can you explain why you did not condemn those hate groups by name over the weekend? They've been condemned, They have been condemned. And why are we not having a press conference today? You said on Friday we'd have a press conference.
We had a press conference.
We just had a press conference. Can we ask you some more questions then, sir?
It doesn't bother me at all, but you know, I like real news, not fake news. Get fake news.
Thank you, everybody.
Sounds like the president was taking a shot at CNN there. We have David Gergen back, I'm told. Mr. Gergen, again, advisor to four U.S. presidents and co-director of the Center for Public Leadership at Harvard's Kennedy School. Did President Trump claw back any sense of moral authority, moral leadership in his presidency?
No, but I do think we need, those of us who have been very critical of him, need to acknowledge that he did do what we asked him to do, and he stepped up today. He denounced the extremism and particularly called out KKK, the neo-Nazis, the white supremacists. So that was a step forward. Now, it's also true that many of us who have been so upset about the lack of moral clarity on his part will say, look, you know, it took him 2 days. He equivocated for 2 days. It was clearly a statement that was grudging. It was done under pressure. And he never called out, he called out the hatred, but he never called it for what it is, and that is domestic terrorism that killed that young woman. And it rang hollow in a sense that this very morning, when the black CEO, Ken Frazier of Merck, mm-hmm. resigned from the advisory board at the White House, saying that, you know, he regretted that the White House wasn't standing up and taking a stand on extremism. He was withdrawing. The president attacked him in a very, you know, vicious way and very personal. And I think a lot of people who look at this will say that was the real Donald Trump. And what you saw giving that statement was a man who was doing it and bowing to pressure.
Right. I mean, he just tweeted out that that the Merck CEO could go back to inflating drug prices. I mean, it took him no time at all to do that.
I totally agree. But I do want to say one other thing, and that is it's important that today that the mother of Ms. Heyer, Susan Breaux, thanked the president in a statement. They thanked him for words of comfort and for denouncing those who promote violence and hatred. Given the fact that the mother has been so gracious in that statement, I think we fairly soon need to move on from what the president has said or didn't say, what he left out, and deal now with the underlying issues of hatred in the country, of a country that's polarized and coming apart, and has so much injustice and a lack of opportunity for so many citizens that we don't want to get so hung up on this issue of what he said and didn't say, what it took 2 days to say.
David Gergen, can I just jump in here for a second? Because you're making a really interesting point. But I think a lot of people might hear that and say, wait a minute. What we saw in Charlottesville wasn't necessarily, you can't lump that in with the economic despair that many people felt that may have led them to vote for Donald Trump. That this was a paroxysm of racism. And I think, you know, Mayor Marty Walsh just earlier this hour kind of hit the nail on the head when he called the president out for the rhetoric that he used during the campaign. I mean, Mayor Walsh said, to the president, he was speaking to Donald Trump directly, you can't hand a megaphone of hate out to people and then pretend that you don't hear it later on, which is afternoon is what Trump was doing.
I agree. I think the mayor is right. And I do think that the Trump campaign for the presidency emboldened a lot of these racists and extremists that they maybe had a friend in the White House for the first time. And so I do think it has contributed to this. But it's also true that a lot of the people we see in these hate groups, you know, come out of homes that are struggling. That were raised in bad conditions, that are facing this opioid crisis in many of these communities. And you know, those are some of the underlying conditions that give rise to the KKK. Listen, I grew up in the white South, in the segregated South. I grew up in North Carolina, and we had the Klan there. And I went with a preacher and some friends. I was working for the governor on civil rights and went to a Klan rally. And I can just tell you, underneath those robes were people who were really felt left out and felt they had no future. And, I don't want to make this all about economics, but I think that part of it is we have a culture that has, and we have a conditions in the country that deserve serious consideration. And don't let's don't get fully distracted by what Donald Trump says or doesn't say.
I take your point about this economic suffering, but. Mr. Gergen, forgive me for saying this. Well, but you're veering very close in my mind, and maybe I'm mishearing you, to offering a kind of reasoning or excuse for people who choose to put the hood on versus all those people who are economically suffering who do not.
No, listen. Let's be very, very clear that the people who put the hood on are to be condemned outright. The KKK is a disgrace. The neo-Nazis are a disgrace. The white supremacists, the anti-Semites, all these people need to be condemned. Thankfully, so many people did said that and came out that way over the last few days, put the pressure on the president, finally said something. But, you know, I hope that a week from now, we're not still talking about whether the president should have said this or should have said that, when we have very, very real conditions that are tearing our society apart. And, you know, and that is no excuse for extremism, but it is for those of us who come from, you know, liberal Massachusetts, we need to understand better than we do what it's like to live in rural America.
Mm-hmm. Well, David Gergen is a former presidential advisor. He advised 4 U.S. presidents. He's currently co-director of the Center for Public Leadership at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government. Mr. Gergen, thank you so much.
Thank you. It's good to talk to you.
Pleasure to have you. Reverend White Hammond, you're still there. You've been listening very patiently, and I really appreciate it. What do you make of what you just heard David Gergen say?
Well, I mean, I think it's really challenging because I actually, people might be surprised, partially agree. but here I have a distinction. So I actually have had the opportunity in a couple of occasions. I used to take young people to the South to study the civil rights movement. We'd stay at often the cheapest hotel we could find. And ended up in a lot of conversations, including with someone who had admitted to me after 2.5 hours of conversation that he had attended Klan meetings. And what I think was challenging for me is that I don't think his story was altogether different than some of the young people that I was working with who had been incarcerated and were trying to put their lives back together. The reality is there are people that are hurting. Now, not everybody that is there is hurting. I want to be clear. There are some people who are there not necessarily because they're hurting, but there are definitely people who are hurting. What is a problem for me is when you talk about young men who are engaged in violence in Chicago, the president doesn't care about the fact that they're hurting. When you talk about people who are living in El Salvador and in fear of gang violence and cartels there, or in deep poverty and don't know if they can make it and it leads them to cross the border, they're hurting too, and the president doesn't care about them. Mm. So I think for me, I just want consistency about who we extend grace and love to and who we actually try to understand. And if you're going to condemn other people and talk about locking them up, then you should be doing the same for white supremacists.
I think that's
so
really...
if you're backpedaling on white supremacists, but you're saying you should lock up kids in Chicago because of the violence there, I'm sorry, I don't have a lot of respect for the inconsistency terms of the grace that we extend to people who are hurting.
Reverend White Hammond, I think that's very well put. Renee Graham, just quick question to you, because I do have to take a break here in a second. I mean, I hear what David Gergen says, because of course, economic despair was a major and continues to be a major part of the moment we find ourselves in. But I also return to this question in my mind, but what about all the people who came to Charlottesville who were just there because they are racist?
Well, this is it. You know, the rally in Charlottesville was not a rally for jobs and economic justice. It was a pro-white rally. That's about race and that's about extremism. So if we're going to talk about, you know, when Mr. Gergen said, well, you know, we shouldn't be talking about these issues next week, that there are bigger issues. One of the issues we need to deal with is domestic extremism and terrorism. And that's what we saw in Charlottesville.
Well, I got a comment here, a tweet from Kanan Thiruvengada, who says, let's separate symptoms, economic inequality, from a misdiagnosis of immigrants and people of color are to blame. Steve Locke sending us a tweet saying, am I supposed to feel bad for Klansmen because they feel left out? And we've got another comment here from Hands to Hearts Center, who says we need a love rally on August 19th in Boston. All right, we're going to take a quick break here. We are talking about all the violence and the terrible events that happened in Charlottesville, Virginia over the weekend, and looking to a rally that may take place in Boston on August 19th. We'll hear more about that when we come back from the break. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston. Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Okay, let's talk about the rally that is planned in Boston for this Saturday, August 19th. It's planned by a group called the New Free Speech Movement, made up of mostly white men in their 20s, and they say they don't have any official association with the Unite the Right rally that happened in Charlottesville and led to all that violence and terrorism in Charlottesville. But we're going to have a controversial rally here on August 19th, perhaps. And joining us now is one of the listed speakers from the rally, Shiva Ayyadure. He's also running for office. He's challenging Democratic Senator Elizabeth Warren. Shiva, welcome to Radio Boston.
Hi, welcome. Nice to be here.
Thank you so much for joining us. So just so I can get some clarity here, who specifically invited you to speak this weekend on Boston Common?
I think one of the organizers from there called my sister. You know, I get a lot of calls as a public figure, mm-hmm. and I was just, very happy to attend a free speech event. And for me, you know, I've been fighting white supremacy and racism all my life. You know, there's pictures of me, if you go to my website, exposing the liberal hypocrisy of MIT, which is supporting apartheid South Africa. You know, in 1982, we chased the KKK out of Boston. You know, I was a big-time activist as a student, making sure more poor blacks and minorities and poor whites came to MIT. So I really think we need to really talk about what white supremacy is here and the real underlying racism. I, in fact, found it hypocritical, the remarks that were made by Charlie Baker and Walsh, when they are essentially sitting on a lot of racism that takes place in Boston. And they talk about it when it's convenient for them.
Mm. Wait, can I just jump in here for a second? Because, I mean, you will be, if you're going to speak this weekend, you're going to be sharing the stage with someone like Augustus Sol Invictus, who the white nationalist Richard Spencer credits him with writing the first draft of the alt-right manifesto. And Invictus's website, The Revolutionary Conservative, calls for basically all-out insurrection. He says the preservation of our way of life requires an insurrection of national scale, the way of life being, quote, whites alone defined America as a European society and political order. So if you're against white nationalism and racism, how can you stand on the stage with someone like that?
Yeah, it's a great question. Look, it's a free speech rally. You know, my view is that it's a great opportunity. You know, one of my mentors, Noam Chomsky, has talked with people of all different spectrums. You know, this is an opportunity for everyone to really talk and discuss. My issues are this, the underlying racism that takes place across this country. And politicians like to talk about racism when it's convenient for them and shed crocodile tears. The reality is what was horrible was a young woman who's the daughter of somebody and two police officers died. We're in fact holding tomorrow at 7 p.m. a town hall vigil at my center here in Cambridge. Politicians will come out like Charlie Baker and Walsh and talk about this stuff when it's convenient for them. But they actually practice systemic racism. I'll tell you this. You know, I've been in the GOP race. I was the first one to announce, and Charlie Baker has yet to meet with me. Yet he has met and promoted one of my white counterparts, who has faked a picture of himself having a fake handshake with Donald Trump. So I find all of this absolutely hypocritical. And the reality is,
but I don't understand what that has to do with racism. Are you saying that? Are you claiming that the governor hasn't met with you because you're not white?
Well, it's an interesting thing. I'm the first, you know, candidate here to announce. And the GOP establishment has not embraced me, has not been inclusive towards me. If anything, has been trying to sideline me. So I find this entire thing of Charlie Baker talking about he cares for all of this, when what I've experienced as a person of color, completely counter to that. As someone who has fought against white supremacy all my life, coming from a Indian background, where I was considered a low caste untouchable, or what Hillary Clinton would call a deplorable.
Well, so I don't think Hillary Clinton, I mean, her unfortunate use of that term aside, I don't think that she was referring to low caste Indians as deplorables.
Well, wait a minute.
But I do want to get back to, I know Hillary you're running Clinton, for office, but
way.
I want to get back for a moment to what's going to happen on Boston Common on August 19th. And you are one of the invited speakers there. And I just want to return to this question. Other folks speaking there are going to be talking about their call for an insurrection against a multicultural, diverse America, and they're going to do it under the guise of free speech. I absolutely believe in free speech. My stock and trade is in, you know, being part of a city that should allow groups like that to assemble. But why would you, who's running for office, want to share a stage with them?
Well, look, let me tell you, there's a group right now who's raised money from the Koch brothers on free speech who said vile comments, perpetrated calling me all sorts of names when the facts came out that an Indian kid in Newark, New Jersey, me, invented email. So the so-called left also uses free speech to their benefit when they try to hide defamation and libel. But I can tell you that I think it's important that all people of all spectrums share stages and share thoughts. That is the American way. And this is a free speech thing, and I'm going to speak about it. But my talk is going to talk about the fact that the establishment in this country, Republicans, establishment Republicans, and establishment Democrats, thrive on race wars. They never really address the real economic issues, as David Gergen taught. And I think to the previous speaker who was attacking Gergen, let me tell you, I fought white supremacy. I know what it feels like to be at the edge of being on the receiving end.
Right. So, well, Shiva Ayyadurai, I'm so sorry that we have to cut you off here. I've just got 15 seconds left, but hopefully we'll have you back to talk a little bit more about this. That's Shiva Ayyadurai. He's a candidate for Senate in Massachusetts. He will be speaking at the August 19th free speech rally that's going to happen on Boston Common. We'll see what happens there. We'll continue our coverage on this. Thank you, everyone, for listening today. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.